accession number 18560, Reel 4.
Harry Simpson, Reel 4. Was it Lorne Campbell who was shot in the throat?
Lorne Campbell was shot through the throat and received for his stand that day with the Argyles, and they wouldn't retreat no further. He was awarded the VC. Lorne Campbell was wounded through the throat and he was awarded the VC for Yonsey. When I heard this, I was very, very pleased. But I can honestly say this, I was very, very disappointed, because our colonel, Colonel Oliver, a dapper little man, and his little moustache, only a small one, a wiry chap, was the greatest. He was the greatest leader anybody could wish for. As I said before, we regarded the battalion as a family, and Colonel Oliver was regarded as the grandfather of that unit. A great chap. But we won the day, that was it. A Company, I'm afraid, were overdone. And I do remember one man who I saw. I couldn't move no further forward. But I remember one man, a great, if ever a soldier, a great soldier, was Pete Murphy, called Pete Murphy from Glasgow. He stood there with his Tommy gun. He just stood up and told his section and the men behind him, "Get back and I'll cover you." He just stood there and rattled away at the enemy, and they rattled away at him. He was like a sieve when he'd finished, but he maintained his men up. I got his men back, and the remainder of the company was captured. I did
hear going back to the back to my platoon. Then I was ordered to get back to my platoon by Major Hopwood, who said, "Get back to your platoon and get the mortars down here quickly to give us some support." And I went back, saw Major Rollo. I told him what Major Hopwood had said, and he couldn't comply because the shell fire was so heavy between where we were, where Major Rollo was, what was it called, the A echelon, and the front line, which was the anti-tank ditch. The shell fire was so severe, nobody could get through it now. How the hell I got through, I don't know, when I run through it on the way back. But we couldn't get the mortars or bang guns through. And eventually the battle died down. We set up for the night. And the next morning, the enemy had gone.
They'd withdrawn from Romano Ridge.
They'd withdrawn. We'd withdrawn for the night and settled down to contemplate what had happened the other day. Well, then we started searching the battlefield, and we found out that we captured over 1,000 enemy prisoners, and we took many, many, many guns, machine guns, and cannon, which was a great thing, because the enemy couldn't use them no more. We'd got them stowed away before we moved the following day. From there we went on, carried on the advance to contact towards Enfidaville. On approaching Enfidaville, we were confronted by Fort Tacruna. Well, I'm saying Fort Tacruna, it was a village called Catruna, at the top of a great big hill, which was sheer on our side as we approached it, with a gradual slope on the rear side towards the enemy positions. There we stayed. We weren't actually in action at Tacruna, but from where we were, we took a hell of a pounding with the shell fire, which kept us down a hell of a lot. And we got quite a number of reinforcements, because the battalion after Wadi Akarit and Fort and Romano Ridge were sadly depleted. We were down to a strength of approximately 420. That's for the whole battalion. So we'd lost more or less two companies at Romano Ridge. Quite a number of reinforcements joined us, mainly from English regiments, but bloody good lads, very good lads. There's one chap in particular I remember, Corporal. His name, a very tall lad.
He'll probably come back to you later if.
Corporal, I believe his name was, I believe they called him Walker, but as I say, my memory is going. He was a great chap, so cool, calm and collected in action. He never flinched when the shells were coming over, the bullets whistling past him. He just stood there or sat down. And then I found out that he was a reporter before the war. And I do believe his father was a brigadier in the British Army. By God, he was a brave man, was that. But I'll tell you more about him later. From Wadi Akarit, we went up to Sfax, and there we had approximately a month, I would say, approximately, rest and recuperation and re-administration and bringing the battalion back up to strength and finding fit again. Replacement of weapons. And of course, men were still coming back. Men are still coming back from being wounded. And we moved on up towards Sousse. We finished up in Sousse. The North African campaign, we didn't have nothing to do in Tunisia. We had no battles at all in Tunisia, as I can recall. But from Sousse, from Tunisia, we moved forward into Algeria by transport. I loaded the the Bren gun carriers onto tank transporters, and we set off over the mountains for Algeria. It was a pleasant journey. Precarious in their places when they're going over the passes to the mountains, sheer drops at one side. So the walls of the mountains were so close to the road, we're practically scraping the carriers as we went on, you know. And we went through Constantine, very pleasant place. And we finished up in Djeli, between Algiers and Philippeville. It's quite a pleasant little place, a little harbour there and everything. And we were billeted in the trees up the hills round about, which was heavily forested. The trees themselves were pretty good protection, because more or less, I don't know what kind of tree they were, but when the Germans were coming over from Sicily bombing us, the blast seemed to be absorbed by these trees, and it gave the impression that they were like rubber.
Were you living in tents?
Yes, in bivouacs at the time. We suffered very little as regards casualties. But the 1st Battalion were further up the hills, up the mountains, They suffered, they seemed to get the whole blast of his bomber force. They had some casualties. But my battalion was very, very lucky. In fact, I think the brigade itself was fortunate. We didn't have many casualties in the brigade, neither did the 1st Battalion. But the main thing in Djeli was preparations for an invasion, which we didn't know where it was going to be at that time. We had an idea that it'd be either Italy or somewhere in Europe, but we had no idea at all. And we carried on the training with the Navy, cliff climbing, transported by destroyers, frigates, practicing landings, invasion landing on the coast of Tunisia, until we withdrew into to Sousse at the end of our training. And to Sousse we went to prepare for the invasion of, as we found out, Europe. But where in Europe, we didn't know at that time. We left Sousse in landing ship infantry, and the next stop on our journey was Malta. Entering Valletta harbour, good Lord, I never so surprised in my life. We understood what the Maltese people and the services had gone through there with the bombing. The harbour was practically littered with ships disabled through bombing. And all around the harbour, the buildings were terribly knocked about. Having landed, we marched up to a concentration area, our battalion, went to some village, I forget the name of it now, but the village itself, it was outside Valletta, and we marched into a field. There was tents erected for us, a big marquee for stores and whatnot, and it was run by a Captain Tug Wilson. I do believe he was in the Lancashire Regiment at that time. Lancashire Fusiliers, maybe, I don't know. I'm not certain. But he was in charge of this camp. We had no money, no Maltese money at all. And we got settled in with no money at all, no Maltese money. None was issued. We were told that none would be issued until we got money for the invasion of where we were going. We sat on the wall, Big Jim. Big Jim and I were sat on the wall that day, that afternoon, the first day. Yep, it's called a Catholic priest. Or a monk, if you call him a monk, I don't know. He was a Catholic priest anyway. And he said to us, he greeted us, how we were getting on, a good day. Then he said, "Have you any blankets to sell?" I said, "We've no blankets at all, just one that we carry with us." I said, He said, "I'll tell you why I ask you." He said, the Maltese people have no clothing, no nothing. He said, "We try to collect blankets, if we can, because we have people making them up into clothing." He was inciting us to be thieves, in our estimation. "If you get any blankets," he says, "he'll give you £1 apiece for them." He said, "If you do come, if you do acquire some blankets, you see the church on the top of the hill there?" I said, "Yes." He said, "Just knock at the door, and a small aperture will open, and all you say is, 'Blankets.' And the door will open. We'll take the blankets from you." Big Jim and I, he went away, and Big Jim and I discussed it. We thought, "Oh, well, to hell with it. We don't know whether we'll survive the bloody war. You can't do nothing without any money." So we needed this big marquee. We had wire cutters with us. And inside this marquee was big bales of wrapped in Hessian blankets, fastened with this wire. And nobody about, we cut the big bale open. And we passed them out and walked across to a bivouac with the blankets wrapped around her waist, deposited them. I think we had about 30. So, in order to get up to this church at the top of the hill, we got our greatcoats out. Took the greatcoats from our big pack, unwrapped them, put them on, and that blankets around her waist. We looked like pregnant women. We walked up to the church, knocked on the door, and the small aperture opened. The face came. He said, "Yes, what can I do for you?" We said, "Oh, with some blankets." "Oh, yes." And the door was opened sharply. And we opened our great coats and they peeled the blankets off from us. We went inside, they gave us a pound apiece for them. So walking back, and a chap came down with a horse and carriage, a gharry, we called them gharries. And he said, "You going to Valletta? I'll take you." "No, no, we're not going to Valletta, we're not allowed. Not allowed in the Valletta, no." "Well," he said, "I'll take you for a beer." He says, "To a place," he says, my daughter is working in this pub. Are you married?" I said, "No, we're single." "Oh," I said, "good. He says, you may like my daughter and marry her." He says, "Well," they were all looking for the trying to marry off the British troops, you see, the servicemen, in order to get nationalised, and they could draw a pension. But we would have none of that. So we bought them a pint of beer, and they said, "This is no good. We shall go. If you don't mind, we'll try Valletta. Are you staying and bring us back? Because we don't want to get caught." Anyway, he took us down to Valletta. I don't know whether I should tell you this or not, but it's all educational, isn't it?
Yes.
We go into Valletta, and there's a place they call the Gutters at some place. It seemed everybody was going there. So we just followed the crowd. We went into this place, this cabaret. They call it a cabaret. There's amusements in there, whatnot, a stage, and acts being performed. So we sat down drinking beer, and a chap, he was dressed as a woman. Anyway, everybody applauded his act, and he walked past us, and Big Jim met a friend of his there, who was in the medical corps. So he said, "By God, that's a wonderful girl." As she walked past, they followed her. The next minute we saw this door open, and this friend of mine, mate, Big Jim, he was thrown out head first. And the Ram Sammy started. The place was in turmoil, so we bolted it. We thought, "We'll get out of here." And we got the guy to take us back. Shortly after that, we were assembled. We marched down to the docks and boarded the LCI, Landing Craft Infantry. Oh, good Lord, we're packed in there. Oh, packed to the guns, like sardines in a tin. And the ship's captain spoke to the colonel. He said, are you fortunate to have a chap who can man the Ehrlichan gun?" He said, "I don't know." He said, "I'll make inquiries." And the inquiries, of course, finished with me. Because I'd fired the Ehrlichan gun. And apparently, the crew of the Ehrlichan gun that was mounted on top of the top deck, and then above control the ship, and couldn't be found. I'm not saying they're deserted, but they couldn't be found. So Buck Brown, I said to Buck Brown, I said, Buck, he was one of our carrier drivers. I said, Buck, there's an ex-trawlerman, I believe, came from Aberdeen. Would you like a job as number two to me on the gun? Where's the bloody gun? He says. I said, it's on upstairs. He says, all right. I think we'll be better up there, you know. I said, because the sea looks rough. I said, I'm no sailor. But I said, in the fresh air, I said, we'll be all right. Anyway, we went upstairs. I taught Buck how to reload and with the magazines. And we set off. The crossing wasn't too bad, but the weather got terribly rough. Good God, the ship was like a cork in the rough sea. There was aircraft going above, heading for in flights, big massive flotillas of aircraft passing over, and that the storm was terrible. Then we heard some cracks, as the loud cracks, or the loud cracks or bangs, as the aircraft were going over. We thought they were dropping bombs, but they weren't. They had some ships at the time that were built by the Americans landing LCTs, landing ship tanks. And one of them was passing by us on the starboard or port side. There's such a bloody bang, and it just disappeared. And we found out later that the sea was so rough, it was loaded with tanks, and the drivers or the crews of the tanks were inside the tanks when it just split in two and just went straight down. Nobody could be saved from it at all. Well, it carried on, and ships were being scattered all over the place. They couldn't negotiate a true course due to the seas, and then the mass of ships that were there, they'd be careful of not colliding with one another. Well, our flight, we're in flights, was dispersed at times, then regrouped and dispersed again. And we thought, this is going to be a devil of an invasion, is this? And by this time, of course, we'd been informed that we were landing at Point Pacino in Sicily. The lower right-hand coast of Sicily. But anyway, as dawn was breaking, we managed to regroup and float into the coast and land. It's an experience there. We were all right. We're in no position in front of our battalion. But the Gordons on our right were engaged from the rising ground. Very low cliffs they were. But it was good defensive positions that the enemy were on. And they were engaged by fire. So Buck Brown opened up with the Ehrlichan gun. I'm not giving our chaps support, but the Gordons support.